the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Anuroha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Anuroha, Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. And in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. That the Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion. By compassionate aspiration that harms no one. By compassionate speech that makes for clarity. By compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret. By compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit. By compassionate endeavor that results in goodness. By compassionate mindfulness that proves this path. By compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply bow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi savaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so we can drop that and end suffering.
Just a reminder that the group is recorded and made available to people participating in our monthly donor program. So what shall we look at? Yes.
So some things have been dropping in this morning for me, which is great. Mm-hmm. And it's always nice to be a part of the TFW because it's such a great review.
Hold on, we're getting something about the sound.
It's a little loud.
Oh,
the water.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Okay, it's always great to be a part of the TINW.
It's just such a fabulous review of practice.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I get to do the retreat along with everyone else. And, this morning, I've always known of the kind of family of origin belief system of that I should do the best or be the best. Uh-huh. And what dropped in this morning was it's really more like being unique. And because to be the best, conditioning would come in and like hold me responsible for competing with people, for, you know, essentially turn that awareness of that belief into a way to keep itself going.
Mm-hmm.
And so seeing a little finer grain with it, that it's really different from that, then that opens, seems to open up some other things. And so in that, there's that striving to be unique. There's a couple of fun little things that happen with that. One is that if someone else, if conditioning projects that someone else has like a good idea or a unique idea, or doesn't matter what domain this is in, if it's in career or wherever, mm-hmm. that automatically that's what is unique, and there's no other possibilities to be unique.
Uh-huh.
And so that singularity, conditioning can really live in that singularity because yeah. it just automatically leaves me out.
Because they've got the unique spot.
And
there's only one unique spot, only one.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the images of like muscle testing
uh-huh.
with various practitioners that do that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they do the thing with the arm, they're pushing on it.
Uh-huh.
It's strong and strong and strong, and then all of a sudden you come into contact with something, and it's like
yeah.
all of the strength just goes out of the body. And that's how that feels. As soon as that projection gets made, then I'm left in that place of less than, nothing, all of those kinds of things.
And the something is somebody else says something that it gets interpreted as unique or special or a good idea or whatever, and
yep.
that's what then conditioning takes and kind of weakens the whole system
yeah.
in you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And ooh, that was going somewhere and it just seemed to have vanished. And so how it seems is, you know, I can relate that to victim and perpetrator. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, in the beginning, it doesn't seem like that, but it sure does as I look at it, that the person who has the uniqueness then is a kind of a perpetrator in that. And so if it turns out to be something that conditioning thinks is a good idea that it originated, then it can take credit for it. Which feels to me like there's a kind of perpetration that's going on, and there's a taking in that.
Yeah.
And and then the same way with that other process. So wherever the uniqueness is, that gets taken and is left, and then I'm left in a place of being a victim, essentially.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
I think so. Let me see if I'm with you. So what it sounds like it happens is that when life is just happening, all these kind of ideas and unique, expressions all over the place.
Yeah.
And then in the conditioned system that you're exploring right now, something will happen, will come in, and conditioning grabs it, kind of takes it, claims it, and manipulates it, and messes and sort of introduces it as its own, and does in whichever direction it wants to go with. It can either, I project and make you sort of special, or you're on top this time, they're on top that time, but it, basically there's an illusion of a separate self that's really rolling at that point.
It gets maintained in that.
Yeah,
so there's a duality with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's unique and then there's not unique. And how, inside conditioning then, it really seems like there's no room for life in that because it's so neutral. In terms of it looking for that uniqueness, it's like it would never occur to turn to life. In life, everything is unique or nothing is unique, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's kind of along those lines.
Uh-huh.
That conditioned mind would resist turning to life in that way because obviously it leaves it out of a job. And it doesn't see life as having uniqueness. It's like it's something to be used or...
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe that.
Yeah, something to be used or stolen.
Stolen.
Yeah, so there's the kind of a perpetrator image that you just used, that it's got to sort of go after because it can't really dissolve into life because then it's out of a job.
Exactly.
It doesn't exist. So it's got to instead use it, exploit it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Call it something that you'll believe, or tell some story that'll catch your attention, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, and that way it gets to stay alive outside, quotes in the air, because there really is nothing outside of life, but it gets to maintain this illusion that it gets to stay alive outside of life.
Exactly so.
Yeah.
Yep.
Dragging your life along. I mean, that's how it does it, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah, and as you say that, dragging my life, and then all of those unique and special qualities that are really there, the authentic me with whatever it is that I've got, all of those kinds of uniqueness and special things, they just get totally overlooked, this is just what was dropping in the world of opposites, those are the things that get twisted into the torture mechanism, whatever those sensitivities and that caring and really enjoying being alive is what gets twisted into the looking to be unique in those particular ways.
Yeah. What's dropping in as you're saying that is Sherry just has a new blog out, and it seems like you're pointing to the same, those pre-story qualities.
Yes.
Authenticity,
yep.
innocence, preciousness, definitely a unique expression of life there. And that doesn't get to be experienced, enjoyed, known, lived, all that, as it gets filtered through that story. There's only, gotta be unique, whatever, gotta be the best.
Yep.
Gotta, yeah. And as it, and so what you started out with is in the TINW work, we basically just circumvent or ignore or see through that whole line of story and reconnect with that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, and that's been happening too. It's really been quite grand. So really wondering about and then slipping into those places where really feeling embraced by, you know, supported by when the wind blows.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a bird lighting on a little branch and just little tiny things like that, really feeling like, you know, there's life and I'm a part of it and I'm actually supported in that same way.
Evolved into that light, into life. Yeah.
Exactly so.
Beautiful.
I've been playing with a certain concept the last week, and it's from that movie, What the Bleep Do We Know,
mm-hmm.
and there was a guy that they interviewed who wrote a book called The Self-Aware Universe, and he tells an anecdote about being at a cocktail party and trying to explain to somebody what he does, you know, I look at how the mind works, and this woman kind of looked at him and said, well, what do you mean, you know, and so like back and forth questioning, and the woman finally goes, well, I guess it's kind of like there's a big TV screen in my head and I'm watching it. And he goes, exactly. Who's watching it?
Uh-huh.
You know, who is that that's watching it? And she was like,
blew her mind.
So to speak. Probably this fuse on the TV screen just busted. So we've always kind of talked, at least lately, about this idea of conditioning putting us in a very small, dark room. And then we've even done it like on the whiteboard where, you know, here's awareness and here's the universe and then here's conditioning and we're way down there. So I've been playing with this idea of picture in picture. So my awareness, when it's the whole TV screen, and then I kind of reversed the deal on conditioning and I put it in this small picture in picture box at the bottom left corner.
Uh-huh.
And I just let it run.
Uh-huh.
It's stories. And then I can open up to, wow, there's all of this.
Yeah.
I'm chopping carrots, or I'm walking up the path, or I'm, you know, I'm listening to the birds, or whatever. And here, and it's still running, and I can kind of see it, that picture in picture. And I know, and I get identified when that takes over.
Uh-huh.
And then all I see is the story.
Yeah.
And then the ability to kind of go, oh, right, okay. I'm not that, and then I shrink it back down.
Yes, you put it back
to picture in picture.
Yeah, when you say picture in picture, you mean like, what do you mean by that?
So TV screens came out, what, like 10 or 12 years ago with picture in picture?
Oh, that.
Because
picture.
Everybody
got it.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
Thought that they could do two things at once.
Yeah, you're watching the game, I'm watching, you know.
Magnolias. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the only thing I ever thought it was good for was sports.
Got it, yeah.
Because you could check into one sports game and then check into another, but you didn't have to know what was really going on. You just wanted the score.
Yeah.
You just wanted this. So it just, it kind of made sense for that.
And so what you're looking at is how the big picture is awareness and life and whatever you're actually doing.
Right.
It keeps reminding me of those. And you'll give 10 minutes. You know, how
right.
Sherry said, we want 20,
right.
23 hours and 50 minutes
right.
of live listening and 10 minutes is. And,
right.
when you're feeling in that dark place, it's, you know that ego's gotten out of
it's gotten
picture and it's gotten projected
switched.
Into
yeah. Or it is the whole screen then.
Yeah, or it's taken over the whole screen.
It's
and you can simply use that image of, no, back in your box. Back in
yeah.
your box.
Yeah, and it's so helpful. It is just... Gosh, and I think whoever came out with picture in picture, because I don't think anybody uses it anymore, because everybody, but for me, that seems to just be a super helpful.
It really is.
Place
it's,
to be.
It's like getting your it's like getting the image to where it could actually thrust you into the life experience, sort of like the difference between a little bitty. You know, watching on your iPhone and an IMAX theater. You know,
right.
You're really in.
Right.
You can be
it's
in
easy.
The experience of life, and that image sounds like it helps take you there.
Yeah. It's really helpful. And then the only other thing I wanted to share was lately I've been doing a lot more communicating, and it's funny how much you can communicate by written note,
mm.
and it doesn't have to be much.
and the cleanness around a written note. And it used to be, gosh, texts are so hard to read, or notes are so hard, letters, because you don't get the person's facial expression, you don't get the tone, you don't get all of that. And it's only dropped in now of, or all the projection that I'm doing on top of that to see the person's face or hear the tone or hear all of that. What if I just take the information and have the information?
Yeah.
And it's...
Yeah, so what you, it sounds like what we are conditioned to think is so helpful in communication,
right.
all that feedback, all that, you know,
the energy thing,
is really static, isn't it? Really,
I think I'm starting to come to that.
So. And to get to, because what I project is to write and some to get a message on a little quarter sheet of paper, there has to be some clarity, right?
Yeah.
We don't have time. We don't have space to just find our way, you know, to the point, right? We have to get to, you know, see the point, see what we want to communicate, and then communicate from that place of clarity.
Right.
Yeah, it's such a helpful little tool, isn't it?
It is really a helpful tool. Yeah. So I'm thinking about writing notes to people.
Yeah.
Could be interesting.
I know, really. Yeah, let's try communicating by notes today. That's a relationship.
Yeah, I'm done.
There. You mean when you get home?
No, I'm not done here.
Some version of that. You know, when we talk about taking the privileged environment out into our daily life,
right?
The principle is the same.
Yeah. You know,
it's really the principle that we're wanting to carry, whether we really communicate by notes or not. But it's that practice of communicating from a place of clarity.
Yes.
And recognizing, you know, static for static, and what's really helpful and what's not, and where I go, and it can really be an exploration.
Well, and in that measure, I have been doing a lot of recording of breakup speeches. I'm up to like breakup speech number 9 or something like that. And it's really helpful to go through them all to finally get to, but what's the real information?
Yeah.
Yeah. That I can drop all the other, you know, story, the backstories, and the, oh, the make them feel better, and the make me feel better, and the all this, and, but what's real? And it's just been fabulous.
Yeah. That's such a benefit of the recorder, isn't it? So we get to listen to it, then listen to this version of it, then listen to that person who only talked about it, and then, yeah, and all the while, that clarity is
exactly, really sussing out the ego part.
Yep.
Oh yeah, that's the ego part. No, that's that's not. So.
That's
one.
Yeah, thank you.
What was said earlier about the uniqueness was really helpful. I've got a similar process that always seemed to kind of get really nebulous when I would try to look at it. There was a sense that that I wanted to be the best, but and so I would call that one the competitive one. But then when I would actually look at the process or kind of the manifestation of that, one who was a competitor would actually work their butt off to become the best, you know, the elite one. And I noticed that I never was willing to put in that effort. You know, I just wanted the kind of the something, and I think it was the it's recognition, maybe. It's very much living in a zero sum world. You know, on the job, somebody else's receiving praise meant that there was somehow a diminishment of me in that, And that had gotten way better with practice over time, but never really kind of like looking at the root of what's at the bottom of that, you know, where somebody wants recognition in the form of money or praise or, you know, however else that might come, notoriety, you know, something like that, where you you know, you're the tall poppy in the field.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so when you see that there is there's somebody that really wants that recognition, and you're saying, it sounds like you're really looking at what's underneath that. What are you seeing? What is underneath the
wand? Yeah, that I'm not sure, because it just came.
It's just coming up.
Yeah, now. Coming up now. Yeah, to see.
And what? So if you are the tall poppy in the field, what do you get?
Well, you get to feel special. Uh-huh. You know, distinct. Sure, I'll say it, better than,
uh-huh.
You know, which leads me to believe that it's is some type of conditioning or some sort of something that's very definitely separate, you know, separate and apart and better somehow.
Yeah, because we, you know, we can see in our better moments and here to just kind of looking at it, that is only conditioning has a zero-sum game world.
Right.
Because it divides, you know, everything up. And so in order to be okay at, you know, at someone else's expense, we can know we're in the dark room in some degree, in some capacity. And so in that recognition, there is, or, you know, in realizing that, there's something there we can, I project anyway, that there's something under that, a need of recognition that then gets taken, or a need to connect, or a need to be seen, or something that can get taken and again exploited or used or manipulated by that world of a separate self.
Right. Yeah. Because ultimately, I mean, I delight in the uniqueness of the manifestation of form,
mm-hmm.
you know, in life and in my own processes and ways of seeing things and, you know, being with myself in that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's a, when I let myself be there, it's a really delightful and fun world to live in.
Yeah.
And I think that is there at the base, and then somehow if you can kind of think of conditioning as being this sort of layer that it, you know, then it kind of runs up against and then sort of like squeezes through or grows through and pops up in all of these sort of unhealthy
mm-hmm.
manifestations
mm-hmm.
Instead of simply staying in that kind of non-separate.
Yeah. So you can see, you have definitely have the experience of delighting in all the various forms of life and all of its manifestations and really just being in that place of delight in life. And then what feels like happens is something kind of comes up and sort of oozes down into it, and then different manifestations of that pop up.
Yeah, either that or I find myself in a conditioned, separate viewpoint or separate place,
uh-huh.
because I have a bad feeling, you
yeah.
know, somebody's getting something that, you know, I wish that I got that, and
yeah.
and I know then that I'm not experiencing my
yeah.
my uniqueness then.
That somehow the intention got pulled away from the delight and every, you know, manifestation uniquely of life to a sort of a competitive or a they get it or I get it kind of narrative or
right,
of
right. Either they're competitive or what also just dropped in was comparative.
Yes.
Where it's sort of like, their uniqueness is better.
Yeah, I want their uniqueness.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Comparison.
Yeah.
Boy, and that is such a great clue, isn't it? When we hear that language of comparison going on, we can know, oh, yeah, I'm sliding there. So.
Yeah.
Which can be a great recording tool or practice to get, okay, what are the opening lines of comparison? Gosh, I wish, or, well, I, you know, what, you know, and even capturing, I don't know if you hear the conditioning, the tone of voice,
mm-hmm.
the words that it uses to start it, you know, to get those on the recorders so that we're kind of queued up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes, I'm looking at this issue of wanting to be recognized as unique or be the best or something. what, when you said what's behind, what's underneath it, of it, it seems like a desire to be appreciated. And what I could see is that when I'm desiring that from outside of myself, I'm not giving that to myself.
Yeah.
I am not appreciating the uniqueness and the specialness of this human being that I inhabit, or however we
yeah.
say that.
Yeah.
And so I'm having a desire for it to come in.
Well, and the saying that we often say that seems to be very applicable here is one process doesn't lead to another.
Yeah.
Like we can't do desiring to be appreciated and appreciating at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And one doesn't follow the other.
One actually excludes the other.
Yes.
If I'm desiring to be appreciated, that's because it's an acknowledgement that I feel I don't have it.
Yes. I've left appreciating, now I'm into desiring.
Yeah, and as we're looking at this, I thought of something that happened recently that shows this. And I got some appreciation from outside, and it was a kind of appreciation that I probably have been secretly wishing to get for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really recognize it at the beginning when it came through, because it didn't land it didn't land on the person who had wanted anything.
Mm-hmm.
It just came in, and then later I saw that, wow, that's what that was, and I no longer am in that in that place where that's going to make me feel okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I just cried at that moment, because what I saw was, then I saw I really appreciated hearing that. And but then I appreciated it not because I needed it, but just because it was.
Ah, wow.
And it was such a it's such a kind of a big awareness that how differently that landed, and I saw how long I had really thought that would be such a wonderful thing to receive, and it was when I came to it from that place. But
yeah. Was it, so let me see, so when it came in, mm-hmm. it really went in, you really were received it, it sounds like.
Not at first. It came and I went immediately to responding to something, you know, in the message.
Uh-huh.
The actual comment that was the appreciation, you know, it's just in a very few words, didn't really land.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to attending to other aspects of the communication, and then I went back to it and I went, well, how did I miss that one?
And then there it was. And there you were.
Yeah, and then but the realization, the insight was there that, wow, you know, earlier that would have been the only thing I saw in the whole email, because that would have been the answer to this desire for having it come from outside.
Yeah. It sounds like that, I don't know, actually, maybe this is really a question, is that one who, or whoever's looking, you know, you say there was a time where that would have been the
mm-hmm.
focus, that would have been all you were looking for. But now that it's sort of taken in, you know, more holistically, everything, things can come in and sort of...
Was it that moment anyway?
Yeah.
I would say all the time.
Yeah. And that is, and maybe, and I'm projecting there, that there's a level of self-care that goes on that need is not as urgent or is not as desperate.
I think it's coming more from internal.
Yeah.
It's being practiced.
Yeah.
It's being practiced. And not just appreciating, not just in the previous, when it was really important to come from outside.
Uh-huh.
I would try to give myself appreciation, but then it would be giving myself appreciation. Now it seems like appreciation is more for everything.
Yes.
You know, it's not coming from that, I need, I need, I need.
Yeah.
It just comes from wow, there's so much to appreciate,
yeah.
so much to be grateful for.
Yeah.
And
it just is.
Yeah, and it's just interesting to have those kind of little things that happen that reflect some change that you didn't really, hadn't really consciously acknowledged.
Yes.
Yeah.
It kind of is like just getting current.
Yeah, getting current.
Thing.
But it made me cry. I mean, actually, I just cried at the whole kind of the whole thing. You know, just all that sort of landed inside my being. All the change just landed there all at once, and it just was very. It just touched me deeply.
Yeah, I project a deep seeing of this person, of this human being, and everything that she's done, been through, received.
Yeah, it didn't really feel like that. It just felt like a deep appreciation, which is of just wow, how does a person get to be this lucky?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How on earth did this happen?
How does a person get to be this lucky?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Jim.
It's fun to have this topic come up. I was looking at some things around this very thing this coming week, this past week. And as people are talking, what keeps dropping in is divide and conquer.
Uh-huh.
And just that sense of, I remember talking to Sherry about this topic a while back, and she was talking about the heart competing with the lungs.
Yeah.
How insane that is.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah, what a great image.
And that's what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I'm getting back to the zero-sum game. And I just saw in that very first exchange this morning how, I mean, everything in life is amazing, is a complete miracle. I heard this recording this morning. I was listening to the recordings, some recordings, and this one shuffled through that I made, I don't know, quite some time back, where I was just eating breakfast and commenting on the miracle of just, like, okay, where do you even start? Okay, granola. Okay, the oats and the granola. Okay, where did that come from? And that took me like 15 minutes. Okay, now how about the nuts and the granola? You know, I mean, and the bowl and the spoon and the, you know, just the miracle, all of it.
Yeah.
Who designed a spoon? How did that
happen? Yeah, exactly. The history of that. And the, I mean, it all goes back to, you know, I kept going back to like the Big Bang, but I was like, you know, I think Buddhists really have it much better covered with before the beginning of beginnings.
Yeah.
It's like any one thing you look at brings in all of existence.
Yeah.
All of it. And so, anyway, in that first conversation, I was just really seeing, I can relate to that's a great image of the muscle testing thing.
Uh-huh.
And how I saw in that, it's such a perfect coup for conditioning to get us to compete. Because it's the way to disarm that miracle of life, you know? So there each form is being this miracle of life, but to compare itself to something else, it's like, yeah, it's the only way to get it to stand outside that miracle that it is. And I mean, it can't not be that, but believe itself to not be that, essentially.
Yeah, ooh, yeah, it's sort of the worming its way into an instituted illusion of a separate self.
Mm-hmm.
So compare, you know. And because before that, or outside of any kind of comparison, there's just miracle. It's just everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's kind of why, yes, there is that place of really appreciating this person and all of that. And at a certain point, I don't know, I'm just seeing this now, so I can't quite, but it sort of feels like the reason that step needs to be in the mix is that when we're young, you know, I mean, directly or inadvertently, we're all raised with that comparison.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was just thinking, I mean, everything's based on that. Mm-hmm. Everything, you know, that's the motivator to get us to whatever, to compare us to each other, to ourselves, to our... what just flashed through was when I was graduating from college and, you know, I was receiving whatever thing, honor I was receiving, and my sister had graduated the year before, and she told me later that my mom turned to her and said, you know, she's just trying to one-up you. You know, just that, like,
And my, you know, I mean, my sister didn't feel that way at all, but it was just that, like, where would, you know, that's just the default to, you know, compare.
Deeply ingrained, isn't it?
It's deeply ingrained. And so for that reason, it feels like there is the piece of the puzzle of really appreciating the particular human. And at a certain point, it just feels like the practice of living in the miracle of life is the practice.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
That even the, there can be a way in which, like, turning the attention to the particular, quote, uniqueness of this human, I don't know, can create a self-consciousness that isn't necessary. Or
if there is a step, that appreciation, recognition, whatever, of this unique, this person, mm-hmm. is certainly a step, because it can, because either because it, maybe it addresses that conditioning, or it's, you know, sort of like an inclusion of, yes, you too, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But in some way, that even needs to be transcended, mm-hmm. because it can then be utilized by conditioning to keep if we get stuck in that.
Yeah, well, as you're saying that, what just dropped in was, because I'm not Jen.
Yeah, good point.
It seems like I'm Jen, so I need to appreciate Jen and recognize that, you know, and that's my job. And it's hard to say, because on some level there is that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more like, we've been talking lately a lot in our year-long theme of that I'm inside of this form, and so in a very physical way, I'm the only person who can take care of this form, because mm-hmm. I'm the one, so feed it and exercise and, mm-hmm. you know, care for it in all those ways. But it's not mine, and it's not me.
Yeah, it's not even, it's not yours, and it's not even you.
Yeah.
It is sort of, it's, yeah, it's one of the Rumi poems is coming to mind. It's like you're a renter, you know? This is your rented space.
Yeah.
And so, you know, don't get too attached to it. Don't, you know, think maybe.
But take really good care of it, because that's your direct access to life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Because not taking care of it is just as much of an ownership of it as taking it personally and wanting it to be the best. And
So identification can happen either way.
It's just so amazing, isn't it? Just, we all do want to be that, well, I do want to be that tall poppy. And there's each of us wanting to be that tall poppy.
The tallest.
Yeah. At least the tallest, exactly. Mm. At least for the people in this room, I project, when we really look to our experience, the places where we're most happy, fulfilled, have what we truly want, are when we're just delighting in all the poppies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And don't even in particularly notice this poppy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't even notice,
Well, don't even, because, like, does the poppy know that it's that poppy?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was trying to get
poppy.
To. Is there even a conversation about,
don't even realize that I'm this poppy, but there's just the delighting in all of life, which includes that poppy.
Yes, yeah. So it's different from a child, sort of, where they're not really self-aware. It's that self-awareness without the stuff. It's dropping the self in self-awareness and into just all of awareness, the dissolving of it.
Yeah.
It's really hard to talk about, isn't it?
It's
It's like yes, no, yes. One of those mornings. Yeah, that conversation this morning has been really useful. It's been kind of up for me too. And I think I saw a piece this morning of that wanting to be best.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see a piece of karma being played out. In my family, there was like a lot of kids. And I was the oldest. You think that would have qualified me right there.
You're the tallest.
I was number one, you know. And not the tallest. I got bypassed by that soon. But I saw that there was, I could be best within a subset.
Mm. You know? Mm-hmm. There was never, because of particular gender and all of this, you know, that was, that best quality was there, but so I could be best, but only at a lower level.
Second tier.
Second to best. Okay. So that was
best
like
of the second.
The best of the second. I'd never seen that before. Uh-huh. And so how that gets to be just this real victim thing, uh-huh. you know, and that if behavior starts to be exceed that second to the best, uh-huh. then it's like, oh, we got to do something to knock it back down again, uh-huh. because it, you know, uh-huh. we just can't. Can't go, you know, stick our head up too far there.
Yeah. And so if you start to get out of the seconds pond, uh-huh. you get knocked down because you just don't belong in the first
right,
pond.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I had never seen that going. I'd noticed some behaviors and stuff. It's like, what? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Why?
Yeah.
You know? What is up with that? You know? Yeah. It's like, and so, you know, just seeing that a little bit going on. Mm-hmm. And so then just being grateful, you know, and in the past that would have qualified for a there's something wrong mm-hmm. category, and then, you know, searching to how to fix that.
Yeah.
You know. Yep. Okay, so now we got to do something about that.
Yeah, so yeah. then there's the desire to, there's that decision to be perfect. Okay, I'm going to be perfect.
Right.
You know,
I'm going to be perfect now that. About getting over that. Being this, you yeah. know, the second tier, and, you know, and, and so I was just, and then I thought, you know, what occurred this morning was kind of earlier, before I even had this awareness, was the gift of practice, and that was walking to the building and just picking the, getting the recorder out as I walked, and having kind of a hard morning, you know, just wanting to be pulled down into a story, and so, you know, picking the recording out up, and just as I talked, you know, it was like, just, you know, the mentor was saying, those birds are singing for you, you know, you know, that sun is shining for you. And it was like, just, you know, and again, it's not that personal you, but, yeah. you know, it's like, yeah, who knows, you know, what a gift. It's this incredible, beautiful morning and those birds and, you know, and just having that whole story just, you know, who needs it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, as you're talking, I'm getting this image of this sort of this kind of a cold mass of story that tried to get started.
Yeah.
It's pulling at you.
Yeah.
And instead, you know, the mentor was there. You know, this relationship that you've been cultivating and building and seeking, and all of it was just available like a warm blanket of love. Just there offered to you.
Yeah, just coming back to that great saying, this here now, all the rest is crapola, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah, it's like, that's just an incredible thing.
Yes, it is miraculous.
It is miraculous.
That happens, that we know how to facilitate that happening mm-hmm. in our lives, we mm-hmm. can practice mm-hmm. it, mm-hmm. and it works.
Yeah, it's just, an amazing gift, mm-hmm. and you know it does. I was just struck with how this morning how possible it is to spend one's life without practice in the crapola mm-hmm. for an untold amount of time, and think that that's it.
And think that that's life.
And you think that's it. I mean, mm-hmm. not only think, you're convinced.
Yeah.
Just totally convinced and have all actions coming out of that, uh-huh. that looking at that little small screen in the corner of the TV set.
I think that's the whole picture.
That's the whole deal.
Yep.
I mean, and there's just no way that you could, I mean, you know, I guess maybe, you know, once in a while there were glimpses that there might be something possible when the heart is connected in, which is what, you know, I think brought me to practice.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it's pretty miraculous.
Yeah. It really does just leave one in a place of great gratitude. Mm-hmm. And that first of all, we know there's another way, mm-hmm. and we even are on that path.
Yeah.
And know it.
Yeah.
And know we're on the path.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing that was coming up was just coming into my awareness this morning was the necessity to, I mean, awareness practice gives us this great opportunity to know ourselves, mm-hmm. because that's where the compassion lies. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, just finding that that what's so, you know, what I see in this life and what I see in this person is not terminally unique. It's also so for others, and, mm-hmm. and how that, you know, just facing those things is the thing that helps to fuel the compassion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All. Yeah, so if I'm following you, then that knowing oneself, that deep recognition of the, is the wellspring of compassion.
Yeah.
And then as we realize that, we can and understand projection, we can recognize that that's so for everyone.
Yeah.
And really,
yeah. Those things that, you know, that I've had to face, those things that, you know, that I think that meant were that something was wrong with me. You know, all of those things that, mm-hmm. you know, this person has walked through or lived through are just an opportunity for compassion.
Yeah.
To just be embraced in compassion and know that everyone is going through that.
Yeah.
Everybody walks through that.
Yeah. And it's all an opportunity for compassion.
Yeah.
An invitation to compassion.
Yeah, which is a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can really relate to the conversation because, of course, I have seen conditioning that everybody else does, and you know, to be special and important, all that kind of stuff. And the one thing that really stuck out for me in the conversation was the thing about if you want to be the best, then you have to apply yourself. You know, you have to diligently apply your attention and your energy in order to become the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't do that.
Uh-huh.
And it's just fascinating to me because, and what I'm kind of getting as I'm sitting with that is, it's because that's not really what I wanted. I never really wanted to be the best.
Uh-huh.
It's just like this programming, but it's sort of flat. You know, it's sort of a thin layer, and so there's an automatic, well, of course I want that. And there's a resentment if I don't have it, or, you know, these kind of things, or anger, these kind of things, but it's thin. It's a thin layer, and underneath that is I don't care about that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I never could make myself do what. I mean, it's not like it would have worked anyway. But you know, I mean, to like really try to compete and try to get that.
Yeah. Well, is it that conditioning really was never successful at getting you to pulling all of your energy into that, because
mm-hmm.
the heart really didn't believe that thin story. It was just
mm-hmm.
too thin.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just dropped in a couple minutes ago, the story I heard about the guy who started Microsoft, whose name I can't remember right
now.
Bill Gates.
Mm-hmm.
And he supposedly, when he was a teenager, he was like, you know, 13, 14, you know, computers were just sort of coming into, you know, they're really huge, and there weren't very many of them, and you know, they still used the punch card things.
Mm-hmm.
And he got access to one of those, like he got a key or something into one of those, like a room that had one, and he, but it was, you know, he was had to go to school, and he had all these other things he had to do, and plus there was only like one in the town,
mm-hmm.
and so it was being used all the time. So he would get up in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
and crawl out of his window,
mm-hmm.
and go to this thing instead of sleeping, and
uh-huh.
spend all night like messing with it and trying to learn about it
uh-huh.
by himself, you
uh-huh.
know. And then he would come back and pretend like he'd been sleeping, and then he'd go to school.
Uh-huh.
And it's an amazing thing to me, because it feels like it's the same thing but completely different. Because
uh-huh.
I don't project on him. I don't know what's going on with him, of course, but you know, I don't project he's doing that because he's trying to compete.
Yeah.
He's doing that because he loved it. He was
yeah.
fascinated about it, and it so energized him that he was willing to go through something like that in order to have the experience.
Yeah,
it's so different. He's not trying to be the best. You know, and so, but there's that same energy that would try, conditioning would try to turn into the competition. Mm-hmm. It's just naturally flowing somewhere.
It's like he couldn't not. Like he was being compelled by this, we can project, and a curiosity, a desire to understand, a love of how it worked, or whatever it was, right? Mm-hmm. That was just, you know, getting him out of bed to do that. Mm-hmm. And the... that can look a lot like, on the surface, it can look a lot like be the best, go after, put all this energy into it. You want to win.
But it's totally different.
Yeah.
And it's just so interesting to me because I have that. I've had a number of things in my life. I mean, I can't say I've ever gotten up in the moonlight to do them actually, but you know that I've had that kind of. Like that's a good way of saying what you said. I can't not do it. Yeah. Sort of a feel to it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting too to look at them because they started off, relatively small in their scope, and shallow in their depth. And then the older I got, the more they expanded and deepened, and finally became practice. But it had that kind of thing. But it's never been competitive.
Yeah.
So there's been a drive, but it's just not a competitive drive.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating to me because self-hate has a lot of stories about how I should have, you know, I could have been competitive and should have and all these kind of things, but it's just, I just never really wanted to.
Yeah, it's what keeps dropping in is it's not what, it's how.
Mm-hmm.
Because and conditioning will just always try to pull us into the it's what.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is its middle name, it's what, you know? Because, and what doesn't ever follow that is the heart. And so even, so, and as you look back, you can see all of these, this evidence in your life of the heart guiding and taking you in these directions that, again, if you were to look at it from conditioned mind, it would want to make it about the what.
Yeah, with incredible energy.
Yeah.
Yeah, just tons of energy for it. And, not caring about, that's all I cared about. Not being carried by eating and things like that.
There's a Marcus Aurelius quote, I think, that Sherry talks about that you know, people who are consumed by what they love can't, you know, would rather do that than wash or than eat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just if that recognizing that or living into that for being human.
Just briefly, the other thing that's come up in the conversation was it feels like there's a to be appreciated. I resonated with that, and it feels like, and that's not, it's not possible to get that, of course, if it's needs to come from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something that's like that is possible, and what I've been looking at for myself is feeling good about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of an odd way of talking about it, because there is no self, but to just do a good job at what or the best job I can do anyway at what work life has put in front of me, or in terms of, or in practice, or just kind of being the best human I can be all the time, produces, and no matter what the results look like, I just feel really good about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not competitive. It's not in relationship to other people at all. And it's cool because then I don't have to have my attention on the other people at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care what other people are doing. I appreciate anything that anybody else is doing that is also, like a nice contribution.
Mm-hmm.
And it just leaves me in this very safe, feeling good kind of a place where there's no angst about who I am or how I'm doing or any of those things, because I'm doing the best I can. I feel really good about that.
Mm-hmm. So in that, describing that experience, would you say that doing a really good job, doing the best we can, is sort of feeling good and appreciation is inherent in that? That it just sort of is?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no need for appreciation after the fact or even during the fact, because it just arises?
Yeah, and there's no standard on the content level either. It doesn't matter how it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
It all that counts is the kind of the, well, like you said, it's not what but how, but like, I'm just doing the best I can.
Yeah.
And that's all that counts. You know, if I do the best I can, and it doesn't turn out that well, that's all right.
Yeah.
Because I was doing the best I can. It's kind of cool too, because it takes the ammunition away from self hate. Because self hate says, well, boy, that turned out like, you know, crap all up.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I mean, I was doing the best I can. What else can I say?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. If I had any bester, I would have given the best.
Exactly. Yeah, that was the best I could do. And so that's got to be good enough.
Which we're always doing.
It seems like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it. It's good though to have an undivided focus.
Yeah.
On that, and it really kind of puts those two things together I'm talking about, because that's really what it is. It feels like what's happened over time is, it's no longer what I choose to focus on, although that wasn't necessarily the case all along, but there's a willingness to give that kind of effort to what life chooses instead, even though conditioning doesn't want it.
Mm-hmm.
And that really feels good.
Yeah.
There's a feeling good that's in that is really satisfying, because it's I'm choosing not ego.
Yeah.
And I feel sort of whole.
Yeah.
Because of that. When I choose what ego wants, I feel divided, and I don't feel good. And I don't feel good about myself because I'm divided.
Yeah.
Part of who myself is this egocentric separate person.
Yes, yes. That, so when you're you choose life, and there's the phrase that keeps dropping in is a dissolving of the will,
mm-hmm.
into whatever life is asking, and the full, wholehearted, and that's doing the best we can.
Uh-huh.
That is it.
Yeah, that's good. Dissolving the will. And the other thing you said was, I can't remember now. Yeah, but anyway, giving up that separate, competitive,
mm-hmm.
thing, and just, you know, that's just, it just feels. Yeah. Oh, it was the appreciation is inherent in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I'm looking for is inherent in that.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like I need to do something particular or special in order to get this feeling of like feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the opposite of the case. I need to give up doing anything particular or special, or trying to be something particular or special, and then I feel really good about myself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a good point. Such a nice example of the world of opposites.
Mm-hmm.
A couple things that somebody sitting here has been really appreciating the image of the poppy arising,
mm-hmm.
Partly because I can relate to wanting to be the tallest poppy too, but also because we actually in our yard happen to have this gigantic patch of these really tall red poppies,
mm-hmm.
that got sort of started accidentally by some seeds a few years ago and have just taken over, and at this time of year, or they're kind of coming to the end, but are pretty spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
And but the thing that I'm appreciating about it is, having watched these poppies now, I know that what happens to them every day, no matter how tall and glorious they are, is they fall off. They only last one day. Mm-hmm. And I just am appreciating that reminder that even if we are the tallest puppy, it's not for long.
All formations are transient.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And some tomorrow, another one's going to be the tallest puppy. And then
so
when
beat the rush, lose the identification
right.
now.
Right? And then when they're all done, there's this mass of dead stuff that has to be pulled up and hauled off, and it's
yeah.
It kind of is just a reminder of, you know, well,
in the end,
what have you got?
The tall poppies are in the dump.
they're the brush dump right now, actually. You know,
yeah.
So I was appreciating that, and. Partly too, because there's a big part of my karma is struggling with change and transience and ending and that kind of thing. So it just felt nice to be reminded of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the other part where I've really been relating to the conversation, I was listening to a recording either today or yesterday, but very recently, where the mentor often ends recordings with something along the lines of it's all okay, or all things are well. And it happened to add on this particular recording, and the only way you are ever going to really get that is to get that yourself. Mm-hmm. Nobody, no matter how many times other people tell you, whether it's mm-hmm. the guide or the doctor or the whoever it is that's the outside person out there, you're not going to get it until you get it from you, for you. And went on to say, and the only way for you to do that is to relax into that open place where it can come in. You can't try and do it. You can't go after it. You can do everything you can to get into that place of being open and available to it. But, and I just thought, wow, because mm-hmm. there's such a strong karma in me that everything will be okay if, and everything will be okay mm-hmm. when. Very conditional, and I'm really, really turning my focus to everything is okay regardless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, boy, as you were just even saying that, I could feel my body relaxing. The only way is just to kind of, just to drop into it and have it. The only way you'll have it is to have it with, you know, within
right. And in spite of everything else, because
regardless.
Because there's always these sensations, there's always these stories, and it feels impossible when those are going on to have that.
Yep.
And yet, I'm getting little glimpses that's not so.
That's not true. Yeah, exactly. You can have it regardless. You are it.
Yeah. Yeah.